Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast, brought to you by RaceForThePrize.com. Let's talk about Dover Cup Series. Back to regular racing. How did your Talladega lineup do? Did it survive? Well, if it did, you're probably not listening to this on Sunday night. You're probably not even listening on Monday morning. You're probably either still going wild or your head is throbbing, but your bank account is pulsating. I guess to those, welcome to Tuesday. The rest of a Sunday night, Monday morning, whenever you're listening, thank you for joining me. Like, subscribe, share, recruit people to the team. Come get your hands on this fantasy NASCAR spreadsheet at RaceForThePrize.com. I know you're not going to buy it for the rest of April, so if you go ahead and buy it for May, $30, I will just go ahead and include the Dover sheets if you haven't already. So Venmo, PayPal, Cash App, $30 for the month of May. Get all those sheets. I'll throw Dover in as well. All right, back to regular racing, Dover racing, regular racing. And you can see on the screen, we got Martin Truex Jr. winning like he always does at one of his many home tracks in Delaware, Dover. The numbers speak for themselves. It was a Monday race. We always know, play Martin Truex Jr. on a Monday. And we always don't play him on a Monday. And then we always kick ourselves later. So if this race, for whatever reason, happens on a Monday, make yourself play Martin Truex Jr. I don't know what about Monday Martin it is. It was actually Truex weekend last year. Ryan won the Xfinity race for JGR. Martin won on Monday for JGR. What a weekend that must have been in their house. They probably weren't listening to a Fantasy NASCAR podcast until several days down the road. Ross Chastain has been strong at this track and at similar type tracks. We're going to talk about these similar tracks here in a little bit. That'll be our next segment here on the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. Ryan Blaney with a strong finish. William Byron has been strong at this track. Three fourth place finishes. Really falls off in stage three. Was pretty dominant last season, stage one, stage two. Didn't get the adjustment right. Truex did, and the race just changed hands. It happens, especially at a track like Dover, which takes rubber and is consistently changing, which for me, favors some of the dirt track racers. To me, favors specific guys. Kyle Larson. Even a Ricky Stenhouse Jr. has found success at this track. Not great success, but just like at Bristol over the years and at Dover, he has been better than normally advertised. Don't go. Now, someone's going to listen to that part of the podcast. Jamming in Stenhouse this week. Easy does it there, Tiger. Just said he's a little bit above average. He's still Stenhouse. But the theory is that as the track rubbers up, you've got to find different places to go. You're going to be moving around. You're going to be searching just like a dirt track racer would. You have to be a little bit more aggressive. You have to be of the mindset of, I'm not just going to stick to my line. And some of those drivers that just typically just stick to their line could possibly struggle at this track. Hamlin's good everywhere. Bell, dirt racer, hasn't quite broken through at Dover, but there you go. Two top tens the last two races. Both of which in the next-gen car. We know what he's doing this year, although he is not really producing results at the moment, but those are because of wrecks and failures. So at some point, his luck is going to turn. Possibly with Bell having these issues, it could lower his ownership. Some people are just going to simply look at finishing position. Maybe not necessarily do enough homework and research, although I think they will. It hasn't been because of lack of performance in the car or his skill. It's just, you know, wrecks happen. It's NASCAR. Reddick Strong, again, also going back to that dirt track background, if he just has a little bit better of a car. But we did see him have maybe the best car at Texas, which is one of the comparable tracks that we will talk about. He's been fast pretty much everywhere this season. He's going to be in your conversation for a hog or dominator. As we alluded to before the Texas race, and you know, Maven, if you have a ton of time, check out some of those Texas podcasts at my YouTube channel, because a lot of the information that applied to Texas will strangely enough apply to Dover. And in the next-gen car, we have so much parity. Hamlin has talked about this. The top 15 are very equal. And we often really don't need to read too much into practice speeds, although you're going to see Group A, Group B differentiation. We didn't see it last year because it was a short practice session. Qualifying got rained out, so not a lot of practice data that you can look at from the 2023 race. But I believe this year we are going to see Group A go out on a cleaner track, be there fast. Group B, going on a track with slightly more rubber, and you're going to have skewed data. But in the Fantasy NASCAR spreadsheet, if you have purchased it or if you plan to purchase it and I throw in the Dover, you'll be able to see the differences. I separate the data so that you can see who is the fastest in Group B. We can look at the raw lap by lap and get a pretty good estimate of where B would have been had they been in A and where A would be if had they been in B, and extrapolate that data. Gotta get the sheets, bros. And if you're not, like, subscribe, and share. Kozlowski, a little bit of a stumble here, but I would say that's easily explained. His 2021 season, while maybe not a pure lame duck season with Penske, you know, definitely his results were low in his last year there. First year with RFK, understand the struggles, and then breaking through the next year. Well, look, Brett Kozlowski comes on board, and we've seen this pattern before at other tracks. Buescher immediately with the money, with the notes, with the guidance, with the push. And Buescher now is a top 10 driver. And right here last year at Dover was really when he started cooking. He started rolling off those wins, finding his groove. Hasn't been quite as consistent this year. Struggled at Texas like he always does. Also, those struggles were compounded by pit road issues. So I'm not going to hold Texas against him from 2024 too much. Although, if you continue to read, you know, what the driver said, which is an article I will consistently remind you to read. After each race, just Google what the driver said, Texas. And then you get those post-race interviews. They don't cover every driver, but they cover most of them. And they consistently interview Brad Kozlowski. And he repeats or echoes the same sentiment every time. Like, I'm disappointed in the speed. We got to get faster. That's pretty cool on a lot of different levels. And he even came out and said, as an owner, it stinks. As a driver, it stinks. I need a better car. But at the same time, I'm the owner. And I'm mad at myself because I'm supposed to make these better cars. And the cars have enough speed, but Kozlowski wants more. And he's honest, and he's telling us like it is. I mean, he's telling you right now, we are not as fast as the Toyotas. Don't expect us to be your hogs in your fantasy NASCAR lineups. We are not as fast as Hendrick. And if he said that at Texas, I don't believe a lot's going to change in 2 weeks. Incrementally over time, sure, they'll probably make gains. Probably not there yet. You look at Kozlowski's race, he battles, really just gets the strategy exactly right. So overall, if you did look at RFK at Texas, it was not a good race for them. Kozlowski gets that great finish, but you had the cautions at the end. And if you look at when strategy played out, when Brad Kozlowski ran long and his pit stop strategy, I mean, absolutely perfect. He nailed it. He got very, very lucky. He was very, very fortunate. And that's why he was honest. Like, we got second, but we did not have this speed. Josh Berry subbing for Alex Bowman gets you a 10th. Alex Bowman has been lights out at Dover, has a Dover win, has some close finishes at Dover, fast car. So although you may not be on Berry, we will definitely be on Bowman. Chase Elliott, again, really solid finishes, really great at concrete tracks, solid results at Nashville, Bristol. Obviously coming off the win at Texas, not a concrete track, but there are setup similarities. And yeah, he's going to be in the conversation. Bubba is there, not as strong, should have a solid day. But the thing that I would be concerned with rostering him, I mean, we got to see pricing, obviously. But the thing is, and you can see there are Dominator hog points over here. Chastain a bunch, Truex a bunch, Blaney a little bit here in this race. Byron, Hamlin, Elliott. The thing with Bubba is, yeah, is he in the top tier? Sure. But this week, there is a top tier. There is a Martin Truex Jr. There is a Kyle Larson, a Chase Elliott. There really is an elite group, a William Byron, that we can lean even further into or more into, even if they don't necessarily have the best track position. But Texas, there was a top group that we really liked, but we did also include track position into our mathematical equation. This week, I'm going to lean more into track history and dial down a little bit the track position. Because as we go on long runs and as the track gains rubber and the groove moves around, you're going to see people that can pass. And we say this a lot. And one of the reasons, like, well, why are those tracks so similar? Some are concrete, some are not. Look, I'm not a physicist, I'm a pretend engineer, so I can't really get into a lot of that. I just know what I know, and I know that there's a correlation between these tracks. I mean, the easiest answer to this, if you really don't want to rack your brain and think about it too much and lose sleep over it, or, you know, you're on your treadmill and you're scratching your head, and which is fine, because sometimes you just want to get your mind off what you're doing, or you're driving your car and you just want to get your mind off what you're doing. But if you don't really want to fret over, I just don't understand. I don't get why they're the same. I think the simplest solution is it's hard to pass in this car. So it's hard to pass anywhere. And if it's hard to pass anywhere, you pretty much just run where you run. And you're going to run where you run at Texas. You're going to run where you run at Dover. There'll be a couple cars that can pass, but for the most part, they can't. And so you just got what you got. It's kind of a stupid answer. But if you got what you got, then really, if you zoom out even more, these tracks probably correlate with other tracks as well. But we know that Nashville's hard to pass. We know the Dover, it's hard to pass. We know Texas, it's hard to pass. So maybe let's not make it so complicated of like, well, why are they really the same? Because it's hard to pass at those tracks. And that's the similarity. And you kind of just go out there and run. And so if you had it already, then you have it and you keep it. And if you couldn't do it, then you don't do it and you don't pass. And so the same thing just keeps repeating over and over every year. Why is Truex always good? Because he knows how to run this track and it's hard to pass. And no one else knows how to do it. Man, that's it. Maybe it's just knowing the hardest to pass tracks. I don't know. Just these tracks correlate. That was the worst answer possible. Gibbs, I think you fit in the same conversation as Bubba Wallace. Although he's taken strides and made gains this season and through the course of last season, I don't think he has much for the elite. LaJoy is the joy. He is your normal thing, but he does have positive results with top 20s in this next-gen car, so that's maybe something to keep our eye on. There's Stenhouse. These may not look like the best races, but a 15th from Stenhouse is a solid day. A second from Stenhouse. Top 20, 10th, 16th. He's going to have bad days, but overall, those are pretty solid numbers from Recky Stenhouse. Jones, kind of just out there, that's fine. Typical Jones-type performances, but he does have a 16th and a 10th. Priest, just doing Priest things. And you also have to make sure you realize that some of these older races were with JTG Daugherty equipment. Harrison Burton actually has produced at this track. I don't know. Good God. We're going to Harrison Burton this week, 20th and 24th. He was in the optimal lineup last year and maintained a pretty good solid running position all throughout the race, but he has been terrible this year, as you can see. At least his driver rating did improve a little bit to 28th at Texas, but, I mean, that simply just was due to, or finished 28th. Driver rating was still 30th. That's what the car's wrecking out in Mayhem. So, yeah, they're just, he can't race the next-gen car. It's as simple as that. And maybe the Wood brothers are just not funding this car that much. Here's another theory you can throw out there. So, for the years, Penske was allied in helping out with the Wood brothers. Now, when they were helping out with the Wood brothers, that was because they were really grooming, probably can't use that word anymore, helping out Ryan Blaney. Blaney left, and it seemed like some of the funding went with him, but they still had a pretty, you know, decent relationship with Matt DiBenedetto in the car. Obviously, the performance fell off a little bit, but DiBenedetto still got a lot out of it. How strong do you think that alliance is now? Next part of that conversation. We know that Front Row this year now has formed an alliance, technically, with Penske. So is Front Row more of what the Wood brothers used to be? How much data and information is really being shared over there? I know Brian Wilson is still the crew chief, but, you know, that's just one guy. I can't really tell you. I mean, they're obviously not in the same shop anymore. They're up there in Stuart, Virginia, doing their thing. So, Brian Wilson, if, you know, he's constantly in the Penske shop, then yeah, but they're not. So, look, I'm not really that bullish. Remember when Kyle Busch and the spring at Dover was a thing? But now he's not really much of a thing anymore anyway. He did pull off the miraculous Texas race, but I wouldn't go as far to say that he really had a great Texas race. We watched Texas. We know what happened. Predicted exactly what would happen. You get some green flag runs, and you get some chaos. I mean, how many times did I say that in the Fantasy NASCAR podcast last week and in the live show and on the Sunday show? Both things can be true. You can have a green flag race and you can have plenty of cautions at the end, plenty of restarts and chaos. That can happen at Dover as well, although I'm more leaning towards this being more of a green race and less chaos. You can, for the most part, generally have clean restarts that don't lead to wreck after wreck after wreck at Dover. It is a self-cleaning track, so you can't have madness in a version of Bristol in a way, but I don't expect that to be the case. I think they'll get through turns one and two. They've done it plenty of times, and they spread out, and then they're just going to churn laps. So for me, especially based on the data that we have over the years and even last year, I would expect green flag runs. And if we're going to run long on green, I just don't see how Kyle Busch is going to be able to compete with the JGR Toyotas or the Hendricks. McDowell, those are not very solid numbers. And as we go through, Logano, a little bit of rough go at Dover. He could quickly turn it around, not completely worried. Kyle Larson, 2019, crushes in 2021, doesn't get the win because Bowman just gets a better restart in stage three and kind of pulls away. 2022, spins out early, damages his splitter, is able to stay in the race, but loses most of his speed. In 32nd place last year at Dover. He was cooking. He was booking. He was one of those few drivers that was able to make passes on the long run. He was working his way through the field. And then Ross Chastain decides to just straight wreck a lapper in Brennan Poole. Brennan Poole up the wall. Brennan Poole takes out Kyle Larson. Larson's been awesome. No worries there. There you go. There's your Larson explanation for the week. You've got the context outside of just looking at stats on a sheet. You're welcome. Here you go. You can see Suarez. He had an issue. He wrecked early in the race, but had been generally pretty good. Just like his teammate at Trackhouse has been pretty good. Trackhouse seems to have this track down, Nashville down, Texas down. We'll talk about this correlation soon. There's Alex Bowman's phenomenal numbers at Dover. He should be definitely on the board, especially if we get a depreciated salary based on his 2024 results. And then we go down and we don't have very many results for these guys because they haven't been out there. So let's jump over and talk about that correlation I was talking about. Hope your Talladega went well. Once upon a time, I hit a Talladega race. And I fully expect, since I've got my one, I'm never going to win another Talladega GPP. So I always approach it differently. Lightning's not going to strike twice. And really winning a GPP at a plate race, making random picks, let's all be honest, like, there is no victory lap that can be done. It's just lightning strikes and you hit and you get lucky and your cars didn't wreck out. So if you didn't get lucky today, don't worry about it. And if you did get lucky today, hell, go out and celebrate. Take a victory lap. No one cares. It's fine. You're awesome. You looked at the data, and you actually predicted the six drivers that wouldn't fail. Come on. That's okay. You got money. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I hope one of you win. Speaking of one of you, the small world that we live in, if you caught the live stream last, it was a couple Fridays ago, we were in Texas. So I'll throw on my Texas shirt because I am an alumni of the University of Texas Permian Basin out there in Odessa. Now, I didn't attend physically, got my master's online through them, but hey, they got a good bit of my money. So at the very least, I've got to put on the t-shirt occasionally and rep them, put on the coffee cup every once in a while and say, go Falcons. So while I did that during the stream, a guy watching, the assistant athletic director for the University of Texas Permian Basin, UTB, emails me. He's like, hey, I've been watching your show for years. I about fell out of my chair. My wife was like, wait, what did he just say? He went to UTB? So he's going to send me some Falcons gear. How about that? It is a small world. There's another guy that listens. He goes to Defiance just down the road to college, or works at a college down the road from me. And since we're doing shout-outs, how about a shout-out to Sterling at the Rattled Cage podcast. They do NASCAR stuff. They also jump onto Edge DFS on the weekends, I believe, do a live show. So check them out. Sterling, that's Rattled Cage podcast, and the Edge DFS is another one where they regularly appear and talk about things. Sometimes they talk about some of the things that I've shared, which I've said is fine with me, as long as you give me a shout out. So check those out. Enjoy those. We're looking at the correlation data. I got Dover on the screen. I got Nashville on the screen and Texas from last year. You can also see Texas from this year. And you can clearly see. So one of the things I've done right here is just quickly comparing Dover Dietrich data versus Nashville Dietrich data. And again, a reminder is this is just a little bit more finite tuning of rating and average running position and weighing top 5, top 10, top 15, top 20, top 25, top 30, laps led, and finishing position, and giving us a scale from 0 to 100 and creating a 0 to 100 rating for a driver. And if you see, compared to Dover and Nashville last year, Ross Chastain, there was just a 3-point difference, 0.03. So virtually a 0.97 at Dover, awesome. A perfect race at Nashville. And you can see, for the most part, if we look at, you know, how close were they, and we set the line at about 15 percentage points, which is, you know, like 3 or 4 positions, give or take, in a race, 18 of the drivers in Dover produced a similar performance at Nashville. And we're looking at all the laps and rating them. And so for the most part, the car and the driver at Dover is basically the same at Nashville. And we could also go a step further and look at Texas. But at the very least, it says, you know, if you're going to look at Dover data, then you probably should look at Nashville data. And I think if you look at those two, then you probably should look at Texas data. You can include everything in your process, but those are the three tracks that I would highlight, especially if I'm trying to figure out who is going to be our hog or dominator or fast lap slash lap leader. We can even come over here and run the average on the 2023 Dover, Nashville, and Texas races. Again, you can see Ross Chastain with a 0.94. Consistently good at all three tracks. He's top of our board. Denny Hamlin, a 0.94. Next guy down, William Byron. So we can see that, all right, who was good there? And then you can take a step further and say, all right, what about this year at Texas? And again, the pattern holds true. So I don't think this is some crazy alchemist plan by me or some scheme or wild theory. It is a hypothesis, but as we look at the data then to prove the hypothesis, pretty strong. Not completely locked in. Obviously, you're going to have some bad races that are going to stand out. But for the most part, we're generally seeing the drivers with good setups at Dover, Nashville, Texas pretty much have consistent days. Going down the list, you got Buescher last year, very strong. Obviously, the Texas situation this year we've already talked about. Chase Elliott still produced pretty good numbers even during a down season, which is very encouraging. And then we saw what it did this year during a good season, dropping a 0.97 on you. Was very excited and heavy on Chase Elliott this week. Loved what I saw out of him in practice. Loved the streak that he was on and the results that he was producing. Explained why sometimes his finishing position wasn't as good. And hopefully you listened to the Fantasy NASCAR podcast before Texas. Truex is up there. Kozlowski is up there as well. But again, if we like were to translate the 0.76, so that's the 76th percentile. That means he's in the top quarter of the field. That means he is a top 10 driver. I believe he's got top 10 driver at Dover. But again, echoing his sentiment that he echoes every week, it's that they are not as fast as JGR or Hendrick, but he is a top 10 driver. And I think Buescher probably a degree faster, although we are reading into 2023 data where he was really hot. So maybe you dial it down a little bit. Why is that ranking showing up? Oh, yeah, because it's looking at 2022. Obviously, this 2020 or 2023, this 2024 number is not factoring into this. Okay. So many numbers. That's what I'm here for. Sort the numbers out. Bubba Wallace right there. Bell right there and climbing. But I don't think Bubba's got anything for those guys. But he has taken a step forward. We shall see. You know, he had a strong Texas race last year. Dover's a little bit different of an animal. So you can't completely wipe him out. But I'm going to obviously lean into Truex first and Larson first. And there's only so many places to go. If we get a depreciated salary on Bubba Wallace or we get place differential on Bubba Wallace, yeah, sign me up. And so these numbers are pretty similar to where they finished last year. I mean, as we go through these drivers, it's very similar to what we were doing at Dover last year. Obviously, Bear's going to pop up in the Bowman car. Larson's average rank is going to get hurt because of the issue he had at Dover last year, wrecking early because of Ross Chastain. But you look at his other two races, 0.83 Nashville, 0.94 Texas. He's fine. You know, Reddick's going to have issues because he has issues. If he could just run a clean race, his numbers would always be good. It's a big if. His pit crew can be very fast, and his pit crew can mess up, and he can mess up on pit road. It's just something that we have to deal with. It's like Sheldon Creed, but I mean, we think of these GPP drivers that can be very fast and just make mistakes on the track. Reddick tends to make his mistakes in pit road, enough so that we have to be consciously aware of that as we're making our lineups. And you can fly down through Stenhouse, 0.47 at those tracks last year. Not that great, but he is right next there to a top 20. We would like to see him be more top 15. And when you look at his history, he is more of a top 15 guy. But if you just look at one season in particular, last season, it's right there. Now, Texas was not very encouraging. So, you know, we got to be careful with our rookie Stenhouse love. Suarez's number is going to be depreciated because of that issue at Dover. It's going to happen. A little bit better at Nashville. You'd want to go through his laps and see what exactly happened there. You'd expect more speed, but he did show an improvement at Texas. I don't think I need to dive too much more into that. So now as we wrap up our Dover podcast, I will go through last year's Dover race, kind of break it down for you. As I mentioned earlier, Martin Truex Jr. won this race. It was Truex weekend in Dover. Both the Truex boys won. I guess the last time, I think it was the Wallace brothers had won a race in the same weekend. What about the Waltrips? Ha, 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 ha. That's funny. The Waltrips winning both races. I mean, it's not. Look, Mikey did win some Xfinity races here and there. They're few and far between. And Darrell won a lot. But I don't know if the Waltrip brothers ever had a weekend where they won everything. Wallace, I believe, those bros did. So here's your optimal lineup from last year. William Byron crushes it, but fades in stage three. Still able to finish fourth, but really had nothing for Truex. Chastain up there. Again, a track that he likes. Truex works his way through traffic. Gets there. Once he's there, it's his race. Blaney at a track where we get fast laps spread out. See, we've got 13, 3, 1, 3, 4, 5, 4. We got these fast laps. You're going to cycle some out. Just the way it works. Similar to what we sometimes see at Bristol. Blaney, just simply by running up in the front, average running position of third, is able to scrape some points and is affordable. Maybe we find a driver that fits that mold this weekend. A guy that we don't necessarily believe is going to be our dominator or our hog, but can run top five all day for a slightly lower price tag and scrapes off a fast lap here or there. Could fit in that optimal lineup. And then because we are going to have to spend for, what, three hogs here, 11.2, 9.8, 10,000, I think that's going to be the general trend. We'll look at that later this week, break down the optimal lineups and see what the build is. But I would suspect that the general lineup is going to have three expensive guys, that in-between guy as our fourth pick, who could be a place differential driver or could be a fast lap scraper. And then from there, we end up with two value plays that are place differential drivers, but they did run pretty well. I mean, Corey LaJoy gets you 13 place differential points. He starts 27th, but ran 16th all day. He had a good race car. He had a good day. He actually was very fast in practice. We didn't get a lot of practice laps in, but he was fast in practice. Now, again, qualifying for this race was set by a mathematical formula because it was rained out. So his 27th starting position definitely did not reflect the race car that he had. So maybe we don't want to read too much into that. We did get this value because of qualifying being rained out. He had a much faster race car, and he showed it. Your other guy was Harrison Burton, who 31st, ran 23rd, which really last year, that's really not that bad because that's about what he did all season. He had, you know, so-so season, much better than this year. But that, again, is not completely off-the-wall crazy value. But we do end up with two guys with place differential. Now, if we look at the laps, break down some of the runs, really what you want to do is simply look at stage two and stage three. If we look at stage two and stage three, we get a really good idea of where the speed was. So what I will do here is I will sort by the end of stage two, showing you some process here, help you out. If you have access to the Fantasy NASCAR spreadsheet, which you can get at racefortheprize.com, go ahead. If you haven't renewed for May, jump on it. It's going to be $30. Venmo, PayPal, Cash App. If you've never used the sheet before and you want Dover, just go ahead and buy May, and I will throw in Dover. So we're sorting by best finish by the end of stage two. And then we can scan over here to where they started the stage. And what you'll see is green flag running, maintaining position. Chastain, third, finishes first, pretty much just holding steady. Byron loses a spot, but pretty much holding steady. Blaney holding steady. Most of the field can't pass, but there will be a couple drivers that can. One of those was Martin Truex Jr., who jumps from 20th and ends up finishing fourth. Is anyone surprised? Now, those laps where he's grinding away will ultimately hurt some of the underlying statistics, and he may not have the highest driver rating because he just wasn't up front all day. Need to calculate a – try to put that into the Dietrich data somehow, but that's for another day. And we can always go back in the pod and check. But here you go. He clearly has a car that can pass. He's done it before. He knows his way around Dover. Hamlin maintaining. Gibbs maintaining. Buescher maintaining. Reddick, a driver, goes from 16th to 8th, so he is able to grind forward. So you're going to put a little check by his name. Elliott maintaining. Bell falls off some. A little bit of a worry, but remember when we were talking about the best drivers? He wasn't really in that conversation. Barry maintaining. Brad Keselowski grinding his way forward. He started the stage at 24th. He gets up to 12th. Bubba Wallace grinding forward, starting 21st, moves his way forward. So we absolutely love Bubba Wallace this week if we can get him at a depreciated salary and a poor starting position. LaJoy maintaining, Harvick falling off, but that really is not the case. If you flip through, he just has an issue late in the run. He's able to bounce back later. He was fine, but again, who cares? Harvick's not in a race car this weekend. And so you can see pretty similar patterns. So there it is. A long stage two, and I expect that again. We're going to have some green flag runs, some very predictable racing. We're going to go from the wildness of Talladega to some very strong predictive races, an intermediate track, and one of the biggest in Dover. We'll look at right before the caution here. Caution's on 388. We'll look at where they were running on 385. And for this giant run, so 385 from lap 259. So you do the math in your head, around 129 laps. Truex starts third. He's up to first. Chastain second to second. Blaney fourth to third. Hamlin grabs a couple spots from seventh up to fourth. Bell finding a little something here. You got three JGR cars now just out there turning laps, churning and burning. Keselowski continues to grind forward from 12th up to 6th. Byron, this is where I told you that he starts to fall off in stage 3. He started the stage at first, and he is going to cycle down to 7th. Some guys improve. Some guys just slightly miss a setup change or don't adjust to the track correctly, and the car goes in the wrong direction. Sometimes you want to look into that. Sometimes you don't want to look too much into that. I wouldn't downgrade Byron at all. You know, it's just the way that it works. Buescher maintaining, Reddick, look, I mean, it's pretty green and solid. Gibbs falls off a little bit. Or you could just say that some people hit it better. However you want to spin it, Barry running what he's running, close to the top 10 in the Bowman Mobile. Elliott having just a solid day, which, though, in the wide scheme of things, looking at what he did last year, that's a pretty good day for him. Bubba looks like he probably hit his peak here, starts in 13th, finishes in 13th before that caution. That's my worry with Bubba is that, yeah, he's about a top 10 driver. I don't think he can dice it up with the JGRs yet or the Hendrick cars just yet. He should be able to separate himself from the rest. Harvick, after his issue, kind of just fades, but did run well up until that situation. LeJoy just having that solid day. Jones just putting in decent work, not moving around. Here's Stenhouse. Starts the stage at 17th, or in 16th, 17th, stays there, and we're pretty much static. Everybody about runs where they run. Very predictable. That is Dover for you. It should be exciting, because if you do your homework and your research, you go through the data, the numbers shouldn't lie. You should be able to trust it. You should be able to trust Dover, Nashville, Texas this year to predict who should have speed. You should be able to look at practice and see who has speed and differentiate between Group A and Group B, and then be able to find the drivers that you like and build some winning lineups. All right, guys. Talladega's gone. It's a back to normal as it can get. You know, even going into Texas, you're like, ah, could there be some chaos? We should just be pretty smooth and simple and regular racing this week. This should be fun. As always, blessed to have you guys listening. Really do love you guys. Trip to Light, fantastic.